It is time, hopefully, for the Media Beat with David Terechuk. David joins us on a Friday. Of course, you can find him at his own website, themediabeat.us. You can find him also posting on Huffington Post. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. David, are you there?
I am here. The end of year wish you may have been making has come true. I am available, and I'm coming through crystal clear, I believe.
Yeah. And you even, here's what happened when we put this new computer in. Not only did it improve the sound from the computer itself, but the affiliated components that go through the board all sound better. What happened?
Like me, you mean?
Like you.
Much better.
although, by the way,
I'm an affiliated component. Well,
not just that. Sort of having to bend you into a shape where you can go through the board is sort of interesting.
Well, the affiliated component was Skype, and that's sounding better. And I had to fix. We were only feeding right channel. That's why Pat couldn't hear it.
And that's why. Okay.
So now it's set, and everything sounds good. So. Happy New Year, David.
Well, it's very nearly time for Happy New Year, yes. I'm looking back on 2017 still, though. I guess I have to get that out of my system, right?
You do. And but before, just one last bête noire before you do yours, okay? This is a gripe. And perhaps it's been going on forever and ever and ever, amen. But
you have a fair long supply of bête noires, I seem to recall.
I do. I have a closet full. They have to be fed regularly. At all events, why is it that stories are presented, things that took place in, let's just say, May, are presented as though they just took place yesterday?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, Especially on cable news television, perhaps you're thinking of. It's constantly replaying bits of tape. Well, it's not tape anymore, but digital recordings again and again and again. As if it were happening now, whereas in fact it happened yesterday or a week ago or 5 months ago, without any real effort to date it for you. And even if it were dated for you, it would still be annoying because it's just rerun again and again. What's the reason for that? Well, you know, there is a reason for it, oddly enough. I mean, it's not just absolute inanity, but of course its overuse is deplorable. The people who do this to us as viewers are journalists, and they believe they're in the news business. And so everything has to be news, actually, you know, new, up to the minute. So everything masks as something that is just now, happening just now. And it's that constant notion of immediacy and living in this very second, which is a bedevilment of cable news in particular. There's no sense of the fact that you're not helped, at least, put it this way. You're not helped to realize that you're looking at something which is, in fact, dated. That's the last thing people want you to feel, that the material that you're seeing is dated. Why not come clean? Well, because of this really deeply ingrained thing of trying to pass off everything as brand new. You'll see it in the copy, in the way that some news items are written, too. You know, we're learning now. Well, it may well have happened. That's a terrible set of weasel words, isn't it? We're, in fact, talking about something that happened 18 hours, 24 hours, a week ago, maybe now, but we're learning that this is going on. Well, you know, it's a deplorable habit, but it's habit born of, I think, you know, the absolute essence of the profession. It's just stupidly exaggerated in this case.
That's a great answer. And with that, I will ship you back.
Can I bring you into my bête noire closet?
Yes, please.
Well,
it's lovely.
Nothing particularly serious. I mean, I want to stress from the beginning that, you know, we're dealing in cable news in particular, but in all sorts of delivery of journalism now. We're dealing, unfortunately, in a sort of irony-free zone, and humor gets a very low priority. And it's in fact dangerous to try and be funny. I mean, as I say, the net in particular, the web is in particular an area where it's really dangerous to try and be a little bit ironic, perhaps, or a little bit witty on the side of irony, or still less sarcasm, where you're entirely at risk of being taken deadly seriously. But here, while I spend every end of the year, as you know, celebrating my annual festival of media mistakes and corrections and apologies, I have always tried to make it, and I will continue to do so, an opportunity for having some fun. The trouble is that this profession we work in now has taken on such a serious and deathly almost pall over this last year. Humor is just, being lighthearted, at least put it that way, is just not as easy as it was. You're dealing, after all, in a climate now where the chief executive of the country tries to stigmatize anything in journalism that discomforts him, makes him uncomfortable at all, as fake news, and you've got alternative facts coming out from the highest office in the land, the so-called alternative facts, even when they are demonstrably untrue. And the cost in journalism is also serious professionally. Just let me run through some of the things, a couple of the things that make me pause as a journalist. A really top investigative reporter, Brian Ross at ABC News, a veteran of this game, was suspended for overstating Trumpian involvement in an outreach to Russia. This is really, really in serious national news. And of course, if you get something wrong, then, you pay the penalty. And three CNN journalists, for instance, were forced to resign after making a mistake. And again, it was about this very serious matter of alleged collusion between the Trump camp and Russia. These are not lighthearted times, but all that said, I do want to have some fun at the expense of my journalistic colleagues. It's an uncollegial way to end the year, and I insist on doing it in a lighthearted spirit, I hope. And nowhere has this seriousness of journalists' condition been more clear than because it's a matter of having a job or not having, or losing a job, or having a job taken away from you. It's at the New York Times, my hometown newspaper. In some ways, I believe the best newspaper in the world, but capable of mistakes. But anyway, the people who were meant to catch mistakes at the New York Times are the copy editors, a profession that I applaud wholeheartedly. But the New York Times, in its cost-cutting frenzy, you might recall back in July, cut a whole layer, huge number of them back. Yeah, cut them by half, in fact, effectively. Down from 100 or so, 109, I think, was the working total, down to about 50 now. So that was a big issue within the profession. And I just liked the way that they protested. They used their own skills, with a bit of wit, I'm glad to say, to protest how valuable that they were and that they shouldn't be done without. In fact, the placard that they were carrying on the protest march around the building, it was kind of sad, but also amusing that journalists would protest by walking around their own building with placards. But this placard stuck out for me. It read, "Without us, it's the new IROC Times."
Yeah.
Just a misspelling of New York.
Right.
Which, of course, it was their job to catch. And they're right. But inside the building was a wonderful sign hanging on someone's office door. It's said like this, and it's worth taking a pause over. "Every time you make a typo," it said, "every time you make a typo, the errorists win."
That's funny. That is funny.
It's a play on words that involves an error. It is an error, and of course, it's a pun on another word, which is really serious. And, the mainstay of so much high-level, serious reporting. But these guys could turn it into one of the best in-jokes, at least, for the copy-editing world.
And can I, may I just interject? I said something to Marshall that I noticed, and this is out of California of all places. It's KABC, all right? And at the end of their...
Know the station very well, yeah.
And the reason that I mention this is because, as you know, there has been, let's just say, an over, a complete seesaw, if you will, into everything has to be, it's not that it's written, it's got to be visual. So everything has video, everything. You're supposed to watch the video, forget the story, you know, never mind the words. Anyway.
It's a plague. A plague of video overtaking all web news sites. Yeah.
And the problem with the plague of video is that, and this is something that you know so well from not only experience but exposure. A photograph is just a moment in time. It's not necessarily anything other than that particular moment in time. It doesn't tell you what happened just before or what happened just after. And that's, you know, that's more manipulation. But KABC, at the bottom of every one of their stories now, says, report a typo. And it's a live link. And I don't know how it got there, but I was pretty pleased to see it.
Invitation to us all to report typos to them, is that right?
Yeah, if you know, if they see
what a great idea.
Because the fact,
if you don't have your own copy editors, make the viewers your copy editors.
Report a typo, but I just I happen to know a lot of people that still want things to be spelled correctly, presented correctly, and are very happy to mention it when they are not.
It's a good thing too, sure. And typos, I mean, it's a humble profession, capturing typos. I mean, copy editors do a lot more than that. But,
oh God,
but,
yes.
But the very presence of a typo is just a little bit of undermining of confidence in the truth of what you're getting, the accuracy of what you're getting. And although it's humble and small and often very unimportant, it's a key element of journalism, catching the typo. And I applaud every publication that makes the habit, as the few best ones do, of printing corrections. And of course, corrections are can be as entertaining as the typo in the first place. Let me give you one from Wisconsin. There's a little beautiful little toy store in Eagle River, Wisconsin, called Grandma's Toy Box, and in the local paper, this correction appeared in their weekly ad that appears in that paper. Let me read it verbatim. Correction. Last week's ad should have read, "See our huge selection of fun toys," not "boys."
Good old grandma, huh?
And then in parentheses, "Sorry for the disappointment."
Yeah, right.
and then, of course, there's the logo for the store itself. But again, in this instance, the correction turns out to need correcting too. The sign off is down at the bottom of the ad. It says, "Grandma's Toy Box, across from the Vilas Movie Theater. Remember, you can drive further, but you can't find a butter store."
A butter store?
Yes. They should have perhaps have done better, don't you think?
Absolutely. And again, you know, humor for anyone, and I tried years ago to be funny in an email only to have an absolutely rabid recipient just all over.
What?
And it's the great reminder that you cannot assume that everyone brings to you just a little sense of, I don't know, ebullience to the proceedings. You just can't assume
right.
That. And
well, I think the way that wit suffers on in our new high speed communications is, of course, I think a lot to do with the high the high speed itself. If you're drummed up to the high pitch that and high rate of speed that you're obliged to, you know, get to in the current climate, then you don't really have time to find things funny. You're not quite in the mood to catch the the humor. And that's a pity. But
well, we want wit. We're going to bring back wit.
Let's try and bring back wit. And you know, and a lot of the, you know, the typo example, which can make us guffaw easily. That's something you catch visually. But often errors are the result of audio, oral communication going awry, and usually it's mishearing rather than misspeaking, but it comes out in written words, and then that's when it starts to look ludicrous. Look at take this one from Us magazine, you know, a vital bit of my reading, as you can imagine. But they're amongst those that do want to publish corrections when they feel obliged to. How about this one? Correction. Due to a transcription error, Danielle Brisebois, the actress, was misrepresented. Discussing the demands of the acting profession, Brisebois was misquoted as saying, "You have to know how to run, you have to be in shape, you have to know how to do sex acts." She actually said, "You have to know how to do circus acts." Us regrets the error. Yeah, I bet they do.
Yeah. Hello. And let me just go back for 1 second, because an odd thing happened, and it was justified, in my view, the same way that, the dog ate my home. And that is the New York Times paper of record ditched their public editor and created a reader center instead, which is
crowdsourcing the correction business. Yeah,
crowdsourcing, right? So that just seems like let's use the schoolyard to determine whether we've got this right. I don't see it.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I think the whole profession heaved a weary sigh when that happened. It was the public editor was the outcome of a terrible scandal in the New York Times, where terrible things were not just going wrong by mistake, but some
people were helping.
A man called Jason Blair, an individual was creating a one-man industry out of falsehood and passing it off as truth at the New York Times. Terrible crisis of confidence for the newspaper. So they created this office called the public editor. And, not so long later, a number of years, I mean, the several editors occupied that position to good effect, all of them, I think. But in the end, time marches on, and the New York Times, in its wisdom, has decided that the position is not necessary anymore. I disagree. I think you do too. You can argue constantly that what authority does one individual have to pontificate on matters of accuracy and correctness and so on. But I think if there isn't anybody, then to rely, as you say, on the schoolyard is the worst of all possible alternatives. Anyway, let me go to another kind of correction.
All right.
This one isn't so much of things misheard or mistyped. Something has clearly been misfiled. How about this one? From a local newspaper in South Carolina, and I'm going to keep it as vague as that for good reason, as you'll appreciate when you hear it. Correction. Due to incorrect information from the clerk of court's office, Diana Kay, who's 38, and again, I'm being discreet about the name of this woman, was incorrectly listed in Wednesday's paper as being fined for prostitution. The charge should have been failure to stop at a railroad crossing. We apologize for the error. Yeah, then again, once again, yes, you bet you better apologize. That's a pretty bad error to make when it comes to an individual's reputation, too.
And apropos, as somebody's done, I don't even know if this number is right, but essentially, there's a headline. It certainly is eye-grabbing. Powerful person accused of misconduct every 20 hours since Weinstein. And I just talk about ruining people's. I mean, sure, it's fun to read, but one is spending any time at all with the ancillary damage. And as someone who, and this is obviously not condoning bad behavior, but I will say this, as someone who once knew a very fine reporter at the New York Times and talked to her just very, you know, openly about something, only to turn around and read that I sounded like a complete moron.
But you weren't being misquoted, were you?
You know, just leave a couple things out here or there. You know, you can make an argument for it. Reminded me that not everything is as it appears. And, you know, there's this certain level of, I would think, ethical responsibility in just willy-nilly making allegations a fact.
Sure. I mean, the whole point is that the reporters do have to check things. Let me give you one last correction, which is a result of someone trying to do their best in making double checks and actually failing. How about this one? This is from the Spokesman Review in Spokane, Washington. Correction. On April 5th story stated that Mary Fryo did not return a reporter's call seeking comment. Miss Fryo died last December.
I'm sorry.
Oh dear. Tragedy is close to comedy.
and perfectly done. I will add to that very briefly that when my mother died, I had basically a war with the financing arm of GM because they would not cancel her loan for the car unless she contacted them. So
yes,
I understand.
We have systems here. We have to abide by
that's
them. I'm afraid the insuree has to call us personally.
Yeah, and they weren't interested in why that couldn't happen. So I will leave this.
On that lighthearted note, we'll end 2017. I hope 2018 is more genuinely than lightheartedly funny for you.
I just want to end 2017 with the tweet that Donald Trump put out that it's going to be very cold on the East Coast for the next week or so, thanks to global warming. It was a
That's right.
And you wonder, okay, now was he trying to be funny, or and then he went on to say that global warming didn't really exist.
Sure.
So I mean, it was amazing. It was amazing, and it was just what I looked at it and I said, you know, this is a great way to end the year. Yeah, he doesn't need to tweet anymore. That's it. That last tweet.
Job is done. Yes.
Well, David, we'll speak to you next year.
We will. We'll all talk together in the next new year.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, The Media Beat.
Thank you.